Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 7, 2020. South Sudan police spokesman denies the report of his forces collecting bribes during a night curfew in Juba.
Every team is under command. If there is any misbehavior from officers, should be reported immediately to the command, or you call 112 emergency call number.
And operators of motorbike taxi, known as Boda Boda in South Sudan's capital Juba, say they cannot stay at home due to a government-imposed ban.
As you see, Boda Boda is riding. They are just being legal because they are looking for their survival. That's why some Boda Bodas, if you see on the way, they are still working.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Police Service is denying reports that officers enforcing the nighttime curfew to prevent the spread of the coronavirus take bribes from people who break the curfew. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
President Salva Kiir announced the 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew nearly 2 weeks ago in an effort to stop the spread of the coronavirus. There are reports that some members of the Joint Security Forces, including soldiers and police, take bribes from people out at night past the curfew. Police spokesperson Major General Justin says he doubts police are taking bribes.
Well, I doubt this because
it is not the police alone working. We are working as a joint force. We have some people from other organized forces, and they are under one command, and the instructions are briefed to them before deployment. They are briefed in the evening what they are supposed to do.
Justin is urging the public to cooperate with the authorities and report any police officers who solicit bribes.
Every team is
under command. If there is any misbehavior from officers, should be reported immediately to the command, or you call 112 emergency call number. Then he will interfere and direct the nearest police force to come to the site to check.
For several years, citizens have accused South Sudan police and other security forces of abusing their powers. Justin warns police officers on duty to strictly abide by their orders, or once they will face the consequences.
We will arrest them,
and then they are taken to the police court. We have a joint court now operating. Any case related to our forces immediately, if investigated that night and in the morning, they will be in the court.
Justin says the Joint Operations Unit enforcing measures passed by the High-Level Task Force on COVID-19 is doing its work across the country. He says a major challenge is managing border crossing points between South Sudan and its neighbors. A little more than a week ago, security forces intercepted nearly 40 people trying to cross illegally into South Sudan from Uganda, according to Justin. The individuals were arrested and put on mandatory quarantine for the past 7 days, says Justin.
We are still monitoring the border because
some are entering through the forest. And we have already linked up with the local communities to report any case of somebody foreign or somebody trying to come to South Sudan illegally. So their cooperation is also assisting us.
Justin says the good thing is most South Sudanese now understand the importance of the curfew and other proactive measures to stop the spread of the virus. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, the recent ban on motorbike taxis, locally known as Boda Boda, as one of the measures to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, appears to be not working very well. Hundreds of Boda Boda operators are back on the streets of Juba this week. Some bodaboda operators say if they follow the government's directives, they would not be able to feed their families. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
2 days after South Sudan confirmed its first COVID-19 case, bodaboda drivers can be seen picking up passengers on the streets of Juba in direct defiance of the government ban on bodabodas. Bodaboda operators say they are back on the streets because they are looking for money to feed their families. Manoja Wilson, a bodaboda driver stationed at Juba's customs market, stands alongside more than a dozen other bodaboda drivers waiting for customer. Wilson says if he stays home, his family will not get what to eat.
That is why with the corona fear that we see us at the road. We are in the road here with all the fear, but we are here because of our family. If we are to stay at home, and at home again, if we are to stay there, even with the situation of this South Sudan, we are not surviving.
Over the past few days, many Juba residents who often use bodaboda to get around the town said it would be difficult to run errands or just move from one point to another without the bodabodas. Juba bodaboda operator Robert Dongun says as much as he fears contracting the virus, bodaboda drivers like himself must pick up passengers because that is their sole source of income.
As you see, bodabodas are riding, they are just being legal because they are looking for their survival. That's why some bodabodas, if you see on the way, they are still working. I was working border since 2014, and this is the way of how I survived.
Tongun says he earns between 3,000 and 5,000 South Sudanese pounds on a good day. He says he uses the money to buy food for his family. Tongun says rather than just banning border borders, the government should come with ways to make life a little easier for ordinary citizens who must deal with the border closures, curfews, and closed stores.
If they could have distributed something to the bodabodas, then that policy will come to existence.
Like
food and things that survive, that make the family to survive. But they did not do that. They just imposed the policy minus knowing the disadvantage.
Tongun says he is doing his best to follow the government's other preventive measures to prevent the spread of coronavirus. South Sudan's high-level task force on COVID-19 said last weekend it was not considering a total lockdown, but encouraged all citizens to practice physical distancing, wash their hands frequently, and stay home. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A South Sudanese has been listed among the United Nations Youth Envoy's top 10 young people leading the COVID-19 response in their communities worldwide. The UN Secretary General's Envoy on Youth says on her blog that fake news about the coronavirus can cost lives. Many young people are countering misinformation with facts. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
Nelson Kwaje is a program director for Defy Hate Now, a community organization based in South Sudan with branches in Cameroon, Kenya, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Kwaje helped create the hashtag 211 Check Collective, a digital community of youth working together to dispel myths about the virus and raise awareness. Kwaje says the group's main goal is to combat misinformation online about COVID-19.
And we do that by trying to engage the public and engage the community in giving us various kind of misleading information that is going around. And then we take that information and we fact check and verify with the available sources of information, whether it's WHO, the government of South Sudan, or whatever entity that has information.
Kwaje tells South Sudan in Focus that by fact-checking and using Google Advanced Search tools, he and other youth sort out fake news and provide people with correct information on social media platforms. He says some people online manipulate photographs in the media and spread myths like drinking tea without sugar heals coronavirus. He says fake news spreads like wildfire on social media.
If people are constantly bombarded by fake information, it really makes it very hard for the government to provide accurate information and for the different agencies to provide response. Because what happens is that all this misinformation kind of confuses people and even make people lose trust in entities that are supposed to be there to help them.
Kwaje says some people spread misinformation to the public on social media using fake emails pretending to be the Minister of Health or an official with the World Health Organization. Jayatma Wickremanayake, the UN Secretary General's envoy on youth, recognized Kwaje as one of the top 10 most influential youth who are sensitizing their communities to stop the spread of COVID-19. In her post on the Medium social platform Friday, Wickremanayake wrote, "We will get through this crisis. And when we do, I am sure history will show the world's young people helped to bridge the world from fear to hope and from confusion to understanding." End quote. Kwaje says it is an honor to be recognized by the UN Youth Envoy.
This is a needed time for South Sudanese youth in general to step up and be the voice in places where the voice is not being represented. We have been known for so many other things, more often less dignified things like wanderers, but it is time for us to step up and also be recognized for the good work.
Other African youth recognized by Wickremanayake include Kenyan activists Wevin Muganda and Suhail Omar, who provide aid to vulnerable people not receiving help from their governments. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the economic impact of the coronavirus on Africa. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes, and where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes, so yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In our today's health segment, we look at the people who are vulnerable to the coronavirus. Since the White House guidelines for social distancing were issued a few weeks ago, all the people with underlying conditions were told they are more vulnerable to coronavirus infection. Another group that is more vulnerable are patients who are undergoing treatment for autoimmune conditions like lupus and arthritis, as Dr. Tala Nsuli, professor of immunology at the Georgetown University, explained to VOA's senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi.
Yes, I think without a doubt we're seeing fewer numbers of reported cases in Africa than probably actual numbers of infected people. We should say, I mean, that's a problem that we're seeing around the world because of the challenges of getting enough testing kits out. And so it's a challenge we're seeing in Africa as well. That's a challenge because that then limits the information and knowledge we have about just where the virus is taking hold, and that then limits the opportunities to isolate those cases and give treatment and to report to the public about what's going on.
Individual countries' responses varies in Africa. Some countries imposed a range of measures to prevent the outbreak of coronavirus, while others declared a national state of emergency. What's your general assessment of the Africa response to the global pandemic?
I think in Africa, really, as we've seen around the world, it's been a challenge to try to fully grasp the extensiveness of the threat that's out there. And as a result, many African governments have been slow to respond and implement some of the preventative measures to limit both the incursion of the virus within countries, but then to try to contain its spread within countries. Again, to be fair, none of us have experienced any sort of pandemic on this scale in our lifetimes. And, you know, the thought of lockdown and restricting movements to the scale we've seen really wasn't contemplated even a few weeks ago. So it's taken a very significant shift in thinking, and then to try to move forward and implement that. You know, I should say, still in some 30 countries or so in Africa, the number of reported cases is below 100. And so there's still an opportunity for aggressive action to try to isolate those cases, prevent intra-household, intra-community transmission, and in that way try to contain the further spread and the debilitating effects that they may have for the broader society.
Algeria, Egypt, and Morocco are among few African countries that have strong health systems. However, the three countries acquired the top numbers of proven infected cases in Africa. Why?
Well, I think the fact that they have the stronger health systems is actually closely correlated with the number of reported cases. In fact, the analysis that we have done shows that the strong health systems, exposure to international contacts, and size of your urban population, those three factors strongly correlate with the number of reported cases we're seeing on the continent today. And so I take it as a strength that those countries have a strong enough system that at least they're identifying the cases and reporting them, so that some action could be taken. They're also at the front lines in terms of treating those cases. And in fact, the information that they're obtaining and sharing with the public is the most important thing that can be done for raising public awareness and helping the governments and communities respond to the crisis. You know, it's those countries that either don't have the capability or have been reluctant to share that information that I think are at greater risk, because they don't really know where the cases are, and the public doesn't know how best to respond and to try to protect themselves.
The African Union is now predicting the continent's economy will contract by 0.8% this year. African finance ministers are scheduled to meet via video conference on Thursday to discuss how to mitigate a looming economic disaster. Simon Max reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Researchers at the AU now believe the continent will slip into a recession this year due to the impact the coronavirus is currently having on trade, remittances, tourism, and a huge fall in global oil prices. An AU report seen by VOA estimates governments will lose around $270 billion from lost trade. The report, first published by Reuters, also says governments will need at least $130 billion in additional public spending to fight the virus. François Conradi, senior political economist at NKC African Economics, a research firm in South Africa, said via a messaging app that African governments do not have much firepower to fight the impacts of COVID-19.
The only things we can do really, and that's what these negotiations are about, is to try and boost state spending capacity by organizing low-interest loans from multilaterals and maybe private lenders, and then inject that money into the economy in the form of some sort of help. So we're doing that in South Africa. We're giving some tax holidays to employers of minimum wage people, you know, just to try and save those jobs. And then there's some other initiatives to make financing available at low interest to SMEs to try and get them on their feet. It's the kind of thing that'll help companies that are still viable, but it won't do anything for the companies that have seen their markets disappear.
One big task for African finance ministers will be to convince institutions such as the International Monetary Fund and World Bank to suspend or even cancel some of the continent's debt load. But, experts say, most of Africa's debt is owned by private bondholders who may not have political or humanitarian considerations in mind when asked to cancel debt. Yeo Dosina, head of the Economic Policy and Research Division at the AU, was asked what Africa can do to mitigate the economic impact of COVID-19. He spoke to VOA via a messaging app.
You will see some measures that have been taken already by member states and including central bank. We try to narrow down the interest rate and also to provide liquidity to commercial banks so that we can also put some money in the treasury of the enterprises. And also there are some social measures that some government have been taking or to provide poor vulnerable people with some resources how they can buy food to eat and also how to try and also to purchase medical material and products and medicine to also treat patients that are now sick.
Dosina added that remittances that are an average of $50 billion per year from the African diaspora have gone down since the coronavirus outbreak began. On Thursday, he said, finance ministers will try and reach a common position on how much debt they want to see suspended or cancelled. African governments will also closely watch an OPEC meeting Thursday, where members are to discuss oil production cuts that would help raise prices and help oil-dependent countries such as Nigeria, Angola, and Gabon. While the full effects of the coronavirus still remain to be seen in Africa, cases are beginning to rise in countries such as Burkina Faso and Cameroon, where there are 345 and 650 coronavirus patients respectively. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A mobile alert created in South Africa is taking the lead in putting information about the coronavirus into the hands of millions. Rakelt.org has gone global, raising awareness about COVID-19. VOA's Salim Solomon has the story from Washington.
A WhatsApp bot developed by a South African organization is helping millions of people around the world get the latest information about the coronavirus. At the time the virus broke out, PrayKill.org had already created digital tools to help people in the developing world improve their health and well-being. One of their most successful was called Mom Connect, a mobile phone service giving expectant mothers vital information about pregnancy milestones and linking them to services. Gustav PrayKill, the founder of PrayKill.org, saw a similar need for information relating to coronavirus. The South African government had set up hotlines, but they were unable to handle the massive volume of calls, and misinformation was spreading quickly.
We were worried that our users wouldn't have access to a trusted source of information. So people, you know, hear rumors and they hear stories and people get panicky and worried about what they should do to keep themselves healthy, especially as all the lockdowns started happening.
PrayKill created COVID-19 Health Alert, offering a WhatsApp-based helpline, real-time data and automated responses to common questions in numerous languages.
Looking for the latest coronavirus updates? Stop searching or panicking and start chatting. Just add 0600-123-456 to your contacts and start a conversation on WhatsApp with the word hi. Here you can get the latest news and tips.
Within the first 10 days, the bot had 3.5 million users and PrayKill partnered with the World Health Organization to create a similar bot to reach a global audience. One of the primary goals is to counter false information about the pandemic.
We're now launching it in many, 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 many languages. And on that bot, you can find out information, but we also publish falsehoods and myths. Because sometimes what happens is you need to actively counteract the falsehoods. You can't just provide the positive information. You also have to say there is information out there that is incorrect. And there are ways that are incorrect how to deal with this pandemic. And we are actively working towards counteracting those falsehoods.
WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, is extremely popular in the developing world, where it has largely replaced Facebook and even email as the primary form of digital communication and networking. It has more than 2 billion users worldwide. In an email to VOA, Machi Jidenma, a member of the WhatsApp Partnerships and Business Development team, said, "We think the most important step WhatsApp can take during this crisis is to help connect people directly with public health officials, providing crucial updates about the coronavirus." Jidenma said the company moved quickly to make WHO Health Alert go live in as many countries as possible, including India, Singapore, Israel, Indonesia, South Africa, Nigeria, Argentina, Brazil, and the United Kingdom. "We have worked with the World Health Organization to set up WHO Health Alert and are partnering with national health ministries around the world," she said. "Each of these health alert lines provides education on myths and rumors circulating about coronavirus." Prakelt said the speed at which the bot has been adapted has been beyond expectations.
"We've had, it's been unprecedented success. More than 12 million people now have accessed the WHO line in the last 10 days since we launched. And we've now launched in multiple other languages as well, including Arabic and Spanish and French and more languages to come. And so clearly people are finding the information useful.
Now it's time to see whether it's having an impact on users' behavior and health.
I think the next step will be to try and understand how people are interpreting that information and whether it's actually helping them to change their behavior.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Freedom by a group calling itself Jaish Amar.
South Sudan, yeah. South Sudanese, stand up. Let me see your left index fingers. Yeah. My country, Sudan, on the verge of history. Let's vote for separation for the South and project more of the African identity. The long-awaited end of the struggle is here. I just registered about the vote, so I'm clear. All this, his inferiority was made so complex. South Sudanese in context, like a central complex. Most feel like refugees in the country. It's a high noon part, South Sudan coming hungry. Our declaration, the referendum, our separation. It's our time. Feel free, cause every vote counts. Once then announced, I raise my AK in the sky. I release multiple rounds. Why? Cause that's what we fought for. That's what we live for. Joseph, Owogu, Oduho, my grandfather fought freedom. My forefathers cried freedom, I can handle. They're talking about infrastructure. They're talking about schools built. They're talking about Sharia roots killed. Kalam Hagi, South Sudan coming soon. Ask Ban Ki-moon about the 9th of January. I say yes to G-O-S-S. Africanization instead of its covered image as an Arab nation.
Our freedom, we need our freedom now. Our freedom, we need our freedom now. Our freedom,
we need our freedom now.
Our freedom,
we need our freedom.
Our freedom,
we need our freedom now.
Our freedom,
we need our freedom now.
Our freedom,
we need our freedom now.
Of extinction, potential attracts a multitude of listeners to the words I drive home. Liberate the saltiness from the harsh life we lead. Got a place to call my own. Separation to reality, art for immortal combat. The technique is shattered by the gun pops and fame. Refugees be starving. How long do we have to flee? Experimenting with Peruvian people like lab mice. Time to break.
We have been listening to Jaish Amar with the song Freedom. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles and homes. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What's before the grind? Come home, my people.